Today's broadcast was originally recorded on April 21st, 2025.
My whole point here is if you deprive one man of his constitutional rights, you threaten the constitutional rights of everybody. And if you threaten the rule of law for one person, you threaten it for everybody in America.
And yeah, that's sort of my whole point too, Senator Van Hollen. Thank you for saying it, sir.
Well, I don't know why I came here tonight.
That's why.
I got the feeling that something ain't right.
No, it ain't.
I'm so scared in case I fall off my chair. And I'm wondering how I'll get down the stairs. Clowns to the left of me, jokers to the right. Here I am, stuck in the middle with you.
Hey, here I am from Pacifica Radio in Los Angeles. This is the broadcast as heard on KPFK 90.7 FM in LA, 98.7 in Santa Barbara, 93.7 in San Diego, 99.5 in Ridgecrest and China Lake. Also in California in Red Bluff and Redding on KFOI and Round Mountains KKRN. Up in Oregon on the Central Coast on KYAQ, Cottage Grove's KSO and Eugene's KEPW. Lanchester, Pennsylvania's W News, Maui, Hawaii's KAKU, in Columbus, Ohio on WGRN, Palinville, New York's WLPP, Rochester, New York's WRFZ, down in New Orleans on WHIV, out in Gallup, New Mexico on KNIZ, Concord, New Hampshire's WNHN, Fayetteville, Arkansas's KPSQ, up in Seattle on KODX, Richmond, Virginia's WRWK, Fairmont, West Virginia's WEFR, Janesville, Wisconsin's WADR, and Minneapolis, St. Paul's AM 950 KTNF. We also stream coast to coast and around the globe every day on the internet, on the Progressive Voices Channel, Netroots Radio, Radio for Humans, NicoleSandler.com, Radio Free Brooklyn, No Lies Radio, Detour Talk, and most of your favorite podcast sites. Blanketing Planet Earth, I'm Brad Friedman, your friendly investigative blogger, journalist, troublemaker, muckraker, and all-around swell fellow, says me from bradblog.com. Thank you very much for joining us today. Welcome back to the Bradcast. We have been off over the past week for a much, much needed break, even if the world did not take a break along with us, unfortunately, amid what was one of the craziest weeks since Donald Trump took office again just over 3 months ago. Craziest, at least, compared to all of the other crazy weeks over those endless 3 months. Yes, it has only been 3 months, Desi Doyen.
I know. It's just incredibly hard to believe. Only 3 months.
Just 4 years to go.
Yikes.
That's all we got left. We can do it. Among the madness of last week, the Democratic Pennsylvania governor's mansion was firebombed over the Jewish holiday of Passover by a right-wing MAGA loon in the middle of the night as Governor Josh Shapiro and his family slept. Thankfully, they were awoken and evacuated safely, but not before much of the historic mansion was severely damaged in that firebombing. There was a mass shooting at Florida State University that killed two and injured six others, allegedly carried out by a 20-year-old student said to be the son of a local Florida law enforcement official. Donald Trump sued the state of Maine over its invocation of states' rights by refusing to violate state law in order to comply with Trump's executive orders regarding trans athletes in high school sports. Harvard University stood up against Donald Trump's threats to withhold billions of dollars in federal grants from the school, declining to bend the knee to our wannabe dictator president, as other schools have in recent weeks, clearly emboldening Trump to continue his radical abuse of power. And good news on the way over to the station today, news breaks that Harvard University is now suing the Donald Trump administration over the funding freeze of more than $2 billion. Good for them. A Palestinian student leader at Columbia University, who was a legal permanent resident who had entered the U.S. lawfully years ago, was arrested by ICE at a meeting that he thought was among the final steps on his long path toward finally becoming, officially, a U.S. citizen. He was taken away, however, in handcuffs instead, and is now facing deportation as part of Trump's mass deportation scheme and as troubling his assault on constitutional free speech rights. Two U.S. federal district court judges and two separate U.S. district courts suggested that contempt charges were likely to proceed against the Trump Department of Justice and the Trump administration itself for lying to and or misleading the courts in two immigration-related matters, one concerning the use of the Alien Enemies Act of 1798 to deport Venezuelan migrants to an El Salvadoran gulag with no due process and in violation of a direct court order, and the other regarding a court order to retrieve Maryland resident and El Salvador national Kilmar Abrego Garcia from the same gulag after the administration claimed that he was mistakenly deported despite enjoying protected status here, and yet there's nothing they could do to bring him back, apparently. The Trump administration, in apparent defiance of even the U.S. Supreme Court, has continued to fail to facilitate Abrego Garcia's release, as ordered by SCOTUS. Contempt charges for Trump officials may soon be forthcoming in both of those cases. After several days of trying in El Salvador, Maryland U.S. Senator Chris Van Hollen was finally allowed to meet with Abrego Garcia, who was reportedly traumatized by his time in the Salvadoran prison since being unlawfully sent there on March 15. Neither Van Hollen nor other Democratic U.S. lawmakers have been given permission by El Salvador's self-declared dictatorial leader and very close friend of Donald Trump, to actually view the conditions inside that prison, though at least seven Republican lawmakers have been allowed to tour the facility, several of whom, appallingly, used photos and videos from that tour for propaganda purposes. And back here at home, Donald Trump's co-president Elon Musk conceded last week that despite his use of his Doge Bro chainsaw, his lawless attempt at gutting U.S. federal government spending by $2 trillion, that effort would fall far short of that goal. It was on track, according to Musk, to cut just 15% of that promised number, about $150 billion in total, which the New York Times finds itself to be a huge exaggeration, inflated with errors and guesswork by the richest man in the world. So $150 billion in savings, probably not that either. But a whole bunch of lives ruined and jobs lost across the country.
Yeah, I mean, considering the capacity of the U.S. government to help Americans both here and abroad and folks abroad in foreign service and foreign aid, I mean, they've just destroyed so much of the capacity of the U.S. government. It's astonishing that they gained so little after destroying so much.
And maybe that was the point.
Yeah, I think so.
In any event, that was, of course, the barest bones summary of much that went on last week while we were off trying, though, as usual, failing to look the other way for a few days in hopes of clearing out and or reinvigorating our brains for the long fight here ahead on the broadcast, before a weekend filled with still more noteworthy news from national No Kings protests held all around the country in all 50 states, once again displaying growing anger against an increasingly authoritarian administration, to a mayoral election that was settled in Oakland, California, that saw former U.S. House Rep Barbara Lee, the only member of both the House or Senate, to courageously, and I would argue correctly, cast her vote against endless war in the Middle East following the terror attacks of 9/11. But while looking for an on-ramp over the weekend to sort of jump back into this madness, I got to say I largely failed. There's just too much traffic. It's just coming from all directions. So I suspect we're just going to have to sort of run into the middle of an eight-lane freeway here and hope for the best, come what may. Wish us luck. If you would like to be part of that traffic, however, and maybe even run me over, feel free. Give me a call with your thoughts on, well, anything over the past week or this week so far, anything of note that you think I missed and or needs to get out over your public airwaves while we still have access to them. And I've been warning you about Donald Trump going after those airwaves, going after Pacifica Radio, going after NPR and PBS. He is doing that. We need your support now more than ever. Whatever station you happen to be listening to us on. But if you'd like to give me a call, if you're in our local Southern California listening area, listening live or anywhere across the web at kpfk.org, my number is 818-985-5735. If you'd like to ring in with whatever is on your mind, we are in Fun Drive once again here at my local flagship Pacific station, KPFK in LA. So if you want to join me on air, please call that number, then hit button number one, and we'll try to get to you. And even better, if you'd like to donate to this station to help them continue to host the broadcast each and every week and each and every day on their archives, hit button number two. You can, when you call in, to 818-985-KPFK. If you are listening via a different station today or in some other way through a podcast or stream, please consider donating to support the efforts of whoever is helping you to hear the broadcast today and every day, hopefully. So in any event, we will jump in. We'll hit what we can and hope we don't get hit ourselves along the way. Though a few things, a few specific points emanating from last week, I think, that did not necessarily get enough coverage or got buried by the Trump administration flooding the zone, but that I think are still sort of underscoring this week's news so far as the new week gets underway. TPM's David Kurtz asked last week, on what planet does federal appeals court judge J. Harvey Wilkinson III, a man on President George W. Bush's short list to replace Chief Justice William Rehnquist, end up as a forlorn voice lamenting the erosion of the rule of law and the collapse of the constitutional order? The answer, of course, is a planet on which Donald Trump is twice elected as president. Last week, Wilkinson authored a Fourth Circuit Court of Appeals opinion rejecting the Trump administration's attempt to stall, block, and avoid U.S. District Judge Paula Zinnes' order that it facilitate the return of the mistakenly deported Kilmer Abrego Garcia, wrongfully imprisoned in El Salvador since March 15. Writing in the order for the court regarding the government's abandonment of due process in the case, Wilkinson wrote, quote, "This should be shocking, not only to judges, but to the intuitive sense of liberty that Americans far removed from courthouses still hold dear." I hope they still hold it dear. That alone, Kurtz observes, was a win for Abrego Garcia and for the rule of law. But a close reading of Wilkinson's order suggests that he sees this case as the final chance to arrest a precipitous decline into tyranny in this nation. The conservative jurist practically pleads for restraint from the Trump administration and those around him. But it's Wilkinson's ominous warnings of what may lie ahead, observes Kurtz, that tighten the muscles and focus the mind. Quote, "The government is asserting a right to stash away residents of this country in foreign prisons without the semblance of due process that is the foundation of our constitutional order." He writes, "If today the executive claims the right to deport without due process and in disregard of court orders, what assurance will there be tomorrow that he will not deport American citizens and then disclaim responsibility to bring them home?" Judge Wilkinson continues, "Now the branches, judicial and executive, come too close to grinding irrevocably against one another in a conflict that promises to diminish both. The executive may succeed for a time in weakening the courts, but over time, history will script the tragic gap between what was and all that might have been and law, in time, will sign its epitaph. David Kurtz's colleague at TPM, Josh Marshall, in a similar vein, observed, quote, "We can talk endlessly about whether we're still in a democracy or whether Trump wants to be or is acting like a dictator. We can debate words such as fascism that were unknown before a century ago. But what we are seeing right now is the definition of tyranny. A half-archaic concept the founders of the American Republic were very familiar with. They had, after all, just overthrown a tyrannical king. Trump's rule, writes Josh, is both lawless and arbitrary. He has taken the bundle of powers that the Constitution provides to him to govern and defend the Constitution and turn them to an entirely different purpose, a corrupt purpose, using them as weapons to attack the people and institutions that he deems his enemies." That sentiment, that message, according to Alaska's Republican U.S. Senator Lisa Murkowski, has been received loud and clear in the U.S. Congress, apparently, among her and her colleagues. She explained last week in Anchorage at a leadership summit for nonprofit organizations, who I also hope to speak about in a little bit, if time allows, unless those of you in our live listening area in Southern California decide to call me at 818-985-5735. Because those nonprofits, by the way, they appear to be next on Trump's hit list. In any event, Murkowski conceded in a response to a question in a Q&A session that even her Republican colleagues in the House and Senate are now, quote, all afraid of King Donald.
What do you have to say to people who are afraid or who represent people who are afraid? We are all afraid. Okay. So I've stated. But we are we're in a time and a place where I don't know. I have not been here before. And I'll tell you. I'm oftentimes very anxious myself about using my voice, because retaliation is real, and that's not right. But that's what you've asked me to do, and so I'm going to use my voice to the best of my ability, and sometimes it will be viewed in a way that, well, that's pretty confrontational. And other times it's going to be using my mother's charm that I learned as a young girl and in direct communication with those that I've made relationships with and am able to affect some change that way. But I've got to figure out how I can do my best to help the many who are so anxious and are so afraid.
A little difficult to hear her sound there, but basically saying we are all afraid, and we're in a time and a place where we have not been before, and that her and her colleagues are afraid. Well, you may or may not sympathize with Murkowski and her colleagues, who arguably brought much of this, if not all of this, upon themselves, as they still continue to fail to exercise their co-equal powers against Trump's tyrannical rule. But if you have any thoughts on that, you are also welcome to give me a call at 818-985-5735. But nonetheless, it's an extraordinary admission, and it informs, I think, so much of what we are seeing play out right now in Washington, D.C. and elsewhere around the country, or alternately, depending on how you may wish to look at it, not playing out as Republicans in Congress continue, in many cases, to cower and give away their constitutional power, while Democrats in the minority, so with very limited tools as far as what they can do, are still, to put it nicely, unsure and largely leaderless when it comes to wielding the very few tools that they can use to try to take on a tyrant. But last week's extraordinary court news, an apparent showdown between the similarly co-equal judicial and executive branches, continued into the weekend in an extraordinary order issued in the wee hours of Saturday morning. The U.S. Supreme Court, as wildly corrupted as it is, nonetheless intervened in the middle of the night to block new imminent deportations under the Alien Enemies Act of 1798 in what some court watchers are regarding as perhaps a shot across the bow of the Trump administration from the Supreme Court about conducting more AEA, Alien Enemies Act, deportations that do not give sufficient notice to detainees, as a unanimous high court ruled just over a week ago that the administration had to do. Instead, they were apparently prepared to rush them out of the country to a prison in El Salvador, ignoring the Supreme Court entirely. The middle-of-the-night order was issued by a 7-2 court majority, with Justice Sam Alito penning a dissent that was joined by who else? Justice Clarence Thomas. Both of these men apparently have no problem with an executive branch defying court orders in order to ship migrants out of the country to a dungeon in El Salvador, potentially for life, despite no due process whatsoever for any of them. The SCOTUS order over the weekend came after an increasingly frenetic effort by the ACLU to block the AEA deportations on Friday. Amid a flurry of court hearings in several states, the Justice Department went on record to say that while no flights were expected Friday evening, it was reserving the right to resume flights as soon as Saturday. That admission confirmed the urgency of the matter, and it appears to have led to the rare middle-of-the-night ruling from the high court to no, don't do it. The justice's brief order directed the administration not to remove Venezuelans held in the Blue Bonnet Detention Center in North Texas, quote, until further order of this court. Apparently, according to NBC News, buses had been on the way to the airport, to Abilene, Texas, to fly off to El Salvador when suddenly they reversed course for some reason. Unclear if it was due to the Supreme Court or one of the other court orders. But for now, those flights have apparently been stopped. But as David Kurtz at TPM observes today, the Supreme Court had largely itself to blame for the flurry of activity and the need to step in after midnight on a holiday weekend. Its earlier decision in the Alien Enemies case, Alien Enemies Act case, mandating an opportunity for detainees to argue their case, at least in court, before being deported under the Alien Enemies Act, which is itself improperly being used here, by the way. But the Supreme Court has failed to rule on that at all just yet. But their order for due process was very vague about both the form and the timing of the notice to detainees that it required before they could be legally removed from the country. They left that seemingly purposely very vague. And, of course, the Trump administration seized on those ambiguities, giving notices to these detainees only in English, did not tell them how to contest their removals or how much time that they had to do so. The administration also seemed to be maneuvering around a district court order blocking AEA deportations in the Southern District of Texas by moving detainees to a more even more radical right-wing court up in the Northern District of Texas, a move that the judge in Washington, D.C., who told the administration that he was planning contempt hearings against them, that he derided as a sign of bad faith by the prosecutors, by the administration. Well, there will be more, definitely more news on all of this week, I am certain. In the meantime, Washington Post reported over the weekend that Donald Trump's own National Intelligence Council, quote, drawing on the acumen of the United States, 18 intelligence agencies determined in a secret assessment early this month that the Venezuelan government is not directing an invasion of the United States by the prison gang Tren de Aragua. That judgment contradicts directly Donald Trump's public statements, according to people familiar with the matter. It also means that any use at all of the Alien Enemies Act of 1798 as justification for deporting hundreds of these migrants is wholly and completely unlawful as well as unconstitutional, as it allows for the immediate detention and deportations of migrants, of citizens from other countries, but only from countries that have declared war on the U.S. or have specifically directed an invasion or incursion of this country, which 18 U.S. intelligence agencies found, despite Trump's lies about it, that Venezuela was decidedly not doing. In case there was any remaining question about any of that and about Trump's gaslighting toward that end. 818-985-KPFK. I've got much more to get to, but as promised, I want to let you derail me a little bit here. Let's go to Margo in Los Angeles. Nina. Margo, you hang on. I'm getting to you soon. Nina in L.A. Hey, Nina, welcome to the broadcast.
Hey, thank you so much. I appreciate your show and makes me laugh while I'm crying. But
you're welcome.
What I wanted just to say that, I wonder if the, extreme lawlessness of the administration, which is sort of a collapse of the moral contract, mm-hmm. Informally, besides all the formal, things he's doing that are illegal, but it's sort of overall just a feeling of a collapse of the moral contract. Mm-hmm. If that's not going to lead to, let's say, a huge jump in, shoplifting and tax evasion mm-hmm. and all sorts of things, because if the government doesn't care to do anything lawfully, why should I?
Yep. Yeah. Tax evasion, that almost goes without saying, given the fact that they are laying off thousands of IRS workers, that I think we're on our fourth acting IRS chief in just the past week alone. So, sure. The incentive, the reason to file your taxes at this point, why bother? Because who's going to actually be there to hold you accountable if you don't? I suspect a lot of people will think that way. I am not advising that. Let me be clear. But I would see that. And I would see your other point about crime and so forth going up. Sure. If these tariffs stay in place and the market continues to crash, we're going to see prices go up. We're going to see people being thrown out of their homes because they've lost their jobs. They can't afford to pay. They've been fired by the Doge bros. Crime will go up with it. I mean, I think you make excellent points, Nina.
Okay.
Appreciate the call. Thank you. And the kind words very much. 818-985-KPFK. I got more to get to, but let me get to one more call before we get to a break. And then more of your calls since I mentioned Margot in Montebello. Margot in Montebello, welcome to the broadcast.
Ooh, hello. Hello, dear. Hello, Brad. I really appreciate and enjoy and learn so much from your program and your humorous, interesting way you present all the information. And it's very important that we follow through and activate and do something to get rid of the toxic orange turd and his two cohorts and the whole regime and properly punish them. But we've got to get back to democracy
probably,
and following the Constitution.
Probably punish them. Yeah, go ahead.
Well, properly.
Oh, properly. Oh, there we go. Okay, yeah, I'm with you on that.
But there's one little grammatical thing that you do that I wanted to say about. It's not her and her. It's she and her colleagues. You need to look at the little pronouns and put them in the proper place. And me and I, sometimes you mix those up too. Okay, just take a look at the grammar.
Yeah.
I, we, you, he, she, they, and him, her, them, there. So her is one and she is another, okay?
All right.
But just anyway, you and Desi, I'm glad you had a little vacation.
Thank
and
you.
I hope you keep on
Margo, by the way, she's Desi is nodding with you and in agreement.
I hope.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Yeah. No, that's
someday we meet.
That's it. I'm afraid to say anything because I'll screw up the grammar.
No.
No.
It's just a little fun thing. My mother was a teacher and she always had me. So I just have a habit of doing that. But I hope we can meet in person someday. That would be terrific.
That would be very nice.
Together.
That would be very
okay.
nice. Thank you for calling. We
thank you so much. Bye. I really appreciate getting to talk with you. Okay, and I'm going to listen now. Delayed, so I'll put my push button on my iPhone. Okay,
well,
bye.
Well
bye.
Done.
Bye.
Very good.
Bye.
I think
bye.
You should.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye. All right.
Okay, bye.
818-985 KPFK. Was that, there? Let me see if I can let that go. There we go. Okay, there we go. One of these days I'm going to learn how to use the phone. The stock market tumbled again thanks to Donald Trump. And now he is blaming Federal Reserve Chair Jerome Powell for all of it. And that, of course, is making the stock market tumble even farther. The Dow Jones Industrial Average traded almost 1,000 points lower on Monday, nearly 2.5% down on the day. The S&P 500 and NASDAQ also closed about 2.5% down on Monday as the Wall Street rout continues. In a Truth Social post, that's Donald Trump's failing social media site, he appeared to blame Jerome Powell for the nosedive in the markets that began immediately with Donald Trump's announcement of unprecedented tariffs, claiming that the economy would slow unless Powell, again, Trump's own appointed Fed chair, by the way, who he referred to as, quote, Mr. Too Late, a major loser. Unless Jerome Powell lowered interest rates immediately, it would be financial disaster, according to the president of the United States, who actually caused this financial disaster. This follows another post last week in which Trump also called for the Fed to lower rates and even hinted at Powell's, quote, termination, which would almost certainly drive down markets even further, whether Trump's firing of the well-respected Fed chair was determined by the White House to be lawful in the first place or not. Stocks fell to their session lows after Trump's post about all of this on Monday. The U.S. dollar was also under pressure. It hit a three-year low as the threats ramped up, falling to its lowest level since March of 2022. Investors are dealing with, quote, a fresh source of anxiety. Trump's threats to Fed independence, writes Adam Crisafulli of Vital Knowledge. He adds this threat is related to Trump's trade war as Powell and his colleagues are forced to stay on the sidelines due to the prospect of tariff-induced inflation spike over the coming months. The virtually unprecedented slump in stocks and the U.S. dollar and Treasury bonds suggests Trump's trade war has set in motion an exodus from American financial assets that no amount of negotiating can reverse, said Crisafulli. Investors' confidence was reportedly also hurt by a lack of progress on global trade. You remember those deals that Trump promised would be coming in spades from all over the world. Apparently, they are not coming in. If anything, tensions seemed to increase with China, according to CNBC, on Monday, with the country warning other nations not to strike any deal with the U.S. that would hurt China. And frankly, given China's vast export business around the world and the disrespect those same nations now have for Donald Trump and America, I suspect those other countries are going to pay heed to China's warnings now and ignore Donald Trump.
As many have been warning, especially in progressive media, Trump dismantling U.S. government and withdrawing the U.S. from the world stage and attacking and criticizing and harming our allies and trading partners, he is opening the door for China to take over around the world.
Yes, he is. And they're walking right through that door. All right, let's take a quick break here. We'll come back with the news about the death of Pope Francis and a whole bunch more of your calls. Looks like a lot of folks want to get in, but I still have some lines open. If you want to give us a try, it's 818-985-KPFK. Hit button number one. If the lines are full or you hit button number two, you'll go to our donation desk. But I'd love to hear from you. 818-985-KPFK. I'm Brad Friedman, and you're listening to the Bradcast.
What the public hears on the public airwaves matters. At the Bradcast, we do our best to bring you accurate news and analysis on the issues that actually matter, and we do it all independently without corporate or political influence. But we can't do it without you, now more than ever. Please help us stay on your public airwaves by going to bradblog.com/donate to help keep us going. That's bradblog.com/donate. And thanks.
Hey, this is Brad. You're listening to an encore presentation of the Bradcast. Welcome back. It's the Bradcast. Brad Friedman from bradblog.com. Going to get to your calls at 818-985-KPFK, 818-985-5735, whatever you want to talk about. But in before I get to some of those calls, the one story that we can't blame directly on Donald Trump today, though his vice president, J.D. Vance, did meet with the pontiff just hours earlier. Just saying. Jorge Mario Bergoglio of Argentina, who served as Pope Francis from 2013 to 2025 and was the first pope from the Americas and the Southern Hemisphere, died on Monday at the age of 88, the day after celebrating Easter with the faithful in St. Peter's Square, where he made his final public appearance on Easter Sunday, repeating his call for a ceasefire in Gaza, describing the situation as, quote, dramatic and deplorable. In his Easter message, which, after greeting the crowd in person, he asked Archbishop Diego Rivelli to read in full.
Cari fratelli e sorelle, buona Pasqua.
Dear brothers and sisters, happy Easter.
Maestro di cerimonie.
I ask the master of ceremonies to read the message.
Sono vicino alle sofferenze dei cristiani.
I express my closeness to the sufferings of Christians in Palestine and Israel, and to all the Israeli people and the Palestinian people. The growing climate of anti-Semitism throughout the world is worrisome, yet at the same time, I think of the people of Gaza, and its Christian community in particular, where the terrible conflict continues to cause death and destruction, and to create a dramatic and deplorable humanitarian situation.
Pope Francis, history's first Latin American pontiff who charmed the world with his humble style and concern for the poor while alienating conservatives with critiques of capitalism and climate change, died on Monday. The Vatican said Francis died of a cerebral stroke that put him into a coma and led to irreversible heart failure. He suffered from chronic lung disease and had part of one lung removed as a young man. He was admitted to Gemelli Hospital on February 14, earlier this year, for a respiratory crisis that developed into double pneumonia. He spent 38 days there, the longest hospitalization of his 12-year papacy. He made his last public appearance, as you heard, on Easter Sunday to bless thousands of people in St. Peter's Square, drawing wild cheers and applause. Beforehand, AP notes, he met with U.S. Vice President J.D. Vance. The Argentine-born Pope brought a breath of fresh air into a 2,000-year-old institution that had seen its influence wane during the troubled tenure of Pope Benedict, whose surprise resignation led to Francis's election. Conservatives, however, grew increasingly upset with his progressive bent, his outreach to LGBTQ+ Catholics, and his crackdown on traditionalists. On a personal note, I will say that until Pope Francis, who, of course, was anything but perfect, I know they call the popes infallible, whatever, But I got to say, I can't say that I was anything but troubled by the popes that I grew up with, up all the way up until Pope Francis. And in fact, his focus on climate really may have been what sealed the deal for me, what really won me over for Pope Francis. Desi Doyen, I know you covered his work on that issue quite a bit on our Green News Report over the years. Want to get to the phones shortly here, but just a few thoughts from you on the Pope's climate legacy here, a substantial climate legacy.
Yeah, I mean, he was absolutely a champion of climate action and specifically environmental justice, the idea that the poorest in the world are suffering first and worst from climate change and industrial pollution. Mm-hmm. And I think it's notable that he chose the name Francis for St. Francis of Assisi, the patron saint of animals, who was renowned for his care for the natural world. So Francis, Pope Francis was a really surprising advocate of tougher action on climate change and environmental justice. He brought unprecedented focus to it at the Vatican and added moral clarity about the social consequences of humanity's impacts on the planet and on each other. In 2015, Pope Francis published a landmark encyclical, that's a letter of guidance to his bishops, that focused on protecting the environment. It was called Laudato Si, on the care for our common home, in which he wrote that climate change and social justice are interwoven, and he focused on the disproportionate impact of climate change on the poorest in the world, and he criticized the economic structures that have failed to address the climate crisis, which was new for popes to even talk about. And it's based, he basically based the whole idea on this, what he called a lie, that there is an infinite supply of the Earth's goods and that this leads to the planet being, quote, squeezed dry beyond every limit. The Vatican even held a climate science in 2025. He was also
climate science summit.
Climate Science Summit in 2025. He wrote another essay in 2023 where he criticized those who rejected climate science and denied their own responsibility in causing it, focusing particularly on rich countries and capitalists and billionaires. And I want to point out that he was also sort of the leading edge of a growing movement among many Christian denominations and other faith traditions that are advocating for climate action and care for creation. And one last thing, Bill McKibben, the environmental advocate and author, he said that the Pope loved solar power everywhere because it's clean and liberating, the best short-term hope of bringing electricity to those without it and keeping that power in their hands, not in the hands of some oligarch somewhere. Mm. He even had the Vatican start building a solar panel farm near Rome, and he said the world... This is Bill McKibben says, quote, the world is a poorer place this morning, but far richer for his having lived.
Indeed. No wonder J.D. Vance poisoned him. No, he didn't. Made that up.
Just bad timing.
Completely made that up. Pope Francis, dead at 88. He will be missed tremendously. We will see who follows him. And I believe the previous pope, by the way, is still alive. Am I right about that, Des?
You know, I haven't looked it up, but I think he is.
I think he is. The Pope Emeritus, as they're calling it. Incredible. 818-985-KPFK. Let me go to Mike in L.A. Mike, there we go. Mike. Hey, Mike, welcome to the broadcast, sir.
Hi, and welcome back.
Thank you, sir. Appreciate it.
I wanted to flag the glaring ironies involved in Mr. Rodrigo Garcia's case. There's a teenager in El Salvador who's so threatened by gangs that he does the remarkably brave and resourceful thing of moving to the United States, where he goes through the asylum process, becomes a beloved father and husband, and a very well-regarded sheet metal worker. And then he is snatched from the streets of America and deported to a gang-infested El Salvador prison by a convicted felon.
By a 34-time convicted felon, by the way, Donald Trump. Now he's imprisoned with the very same prison gangs that he was attempting to escape so many years ago and that he had successfully escaped and was living here perfectly lawfully, did it the right way. And still got punished.
America.
Yeah. And if it, well, unfortunately, it doesn't only happen in here in America, but apparently it does now happen here in America. Thanks, Mike. I appreciate it. Good to hear from you, sir. 818-985-KPFK is our phone number. Let's go to Russ, who I hate to. Russ, driving on the 101 freeway, I hope you're being safe as you talk to me hands-free.
How you doing, sir?
I'm okay. What's up, brother? Oh, Russ.
Well, I was kind of looking back at, my name's Russ.
Okay.
I was kind of looking back at Donald Trump's first term where he dominated the media to hide things he was doing.
Yeah.
He appears to be doing the same thing now. Pulling all kinds of stunts, he knows he's going to lose. In the backside, Russia and China's economy is starting to grow because we are losing our trade.
Mm.
And I haven't heard nothing about Ukraine in months.
Mm.
All I hear is little tidbits.
Yeah.
So he's basically screening that over. In the meantime, while we jump around chasing our pocketbooks, he's getting away with a whole lot, I think, behind the scenes. But he dominates the news feeds everywhere.
Yep. He certainly does. He's living rent-free in many of our brains, I'm sorry to say. Hey, thanks, Russ. I appreciate that call. Please do drive safely out there on the 101. 818-985-KPFK. Let's go to Lynn in Sherman Oaks. Hey, Lynn, welcome to the broadcast.
I can hear you.
I can hear you, Lynn.
Thank you for taking my call, Brad. I have two questions related to if, I guess, the Supreme Court has found Donald Trump administration in contempt of criminal contempt of court. So my question is about that scenario.
Mm-hmm.
If that's the case, then can the Congress move or act to disbar Pam Bondi? And then my second question related to that is then can Congress also act to get the banks who are accepting the funding for that concentration camp in El Salvador, can those banks that are accepting that money on behalf of the El Salvadorian government from the United States, can they be prosecuted under international monetary laws, like, you know, wire fraud or accepting money from a rogue nation or something like that? You know what I mean?
Sort of fascinating questions, all of them, Lynn. And let me give you my thoughts on them, along with the disclaimer that I am not an attorney. But my understanding when it comes to criminal contempt, the judge, there's two different judges right now, only two for the moment. We'll see. There may be more looking at contempt charges against these attorneys. Who have lied to them from the Department of Justice about all of this. He has not. There's a he and a she, both saying they plan to move forward with contempt hearings, charges in some fashion. They have not yet been found in contempt. And there's a question of whether it's criminal contempt or civil contempt. And maybe when we have more time, we'll get into the difference between those two. You can end up going to jail under either of them. But for our purposes here, one of the big differences, criminal contempt, the president of the United States can pardon them for if they are found in criminal contempt. If they are found in civil contempt, they cannot be pardoned by the president. That's something to keep in mind, I think, as we move forward. And by the way, they can still end up in jail under civil contempt if they refuse to do whatever it is that a judge might be demanding that they do. Let's see. Congress, you ask, can Pam Bondi be disbarred by Congress? No, not to my understanding. She can be, however, impeached. Under the Constitution, the Congress has the power to do that, but it's really hard. It would have to pass in the House and then get a 2/3 vote in the Senate, which is dominated by, you know, Republicans. So it would be very difficult to make that happen. To be disbarred, however, that would be, you know, the D.C. bar, the Florida bar or whatever bar association, wherever it is that she has her law license. If she actually has one, she doesn't act like she has one. But if she actually has one, it would be a bar association, as I understand it, who would ultimately disbar her. And as far as prosecuting the banks, that I don't know if I have an answer for. You're suggesting that the banks who are basically helping the U.S. pay money to El Salvador to house these migrants.
Correct.
That they would be, if they were to be held, it's an interesting question.
Because isn't that like they would be accepting money from criminals in that case, wouldn't they?
who would be the bank accepting the money from the U.S. government being the criminal?
Correct.
Interesting idea, but I don't think it's unlawful. Again, not a lawyer, but I don't think it's unlawful for the U.S. to give money to El Salvador necessarily for any reason. If, however, they are violating the law, the Alien Enemies Act, the Alien Enemies Act doesn't say anything about paying off countries to house our people who are violating the law or something. So it would be separate issues. But I do like your thinking, Lynn. Keep thinking that way, because there's going to be a lot of accountability ahead. It may be a while before we get there, but it needs to happen, and it may need to happen creatively. So keep up the interesting thoughts.
Yes, we hope so.
Yeah.
Thank you. Thank you for your show.
Thank you, Lynn. Really appreciate it. 818-985-KPFK. Let me go to... very quickly to Rob in Apple Valley. Hey, Rob, welcome to the broadcast.
Hey, good to speak with you. Man, your show has been incredible. So I'm going to keep it short. I'm just going to crack a joke. You know, you haven't mentioned Pete Hegseth, right?
Correct.
He usually doesn't break the law, but when he does, he drinks Dos Equis, and actually probably drinks Cuatro of them or so. You know, so watch out, you know.
There you go. a joke about Whiskey Pete.
Probably chasing it with who knows what. Anyways, I would love to chat with you and ask you a bunch more things, but I'm going to let you take more calls.
Well played, Rob. Well played, because I do got a lot to get to. I appreciate it. And especially since I didn't get to Pete Hegseth. I wanted to. He was actually next on my list. But unfortunately, Desi went on way too long about Pope Francis. So sorry.
Unfortunately, Hegseth is still going to be around.
Yeah. Maybe. Not so sure about that, by the way. We'll see. A second violation of a signal chat, this time with his wife and his brother and his personal attorney getting the play-by-play details of the Pentagon attack on Yemen. And all of his top – well, I'll try to get to
so
it.
So much national
I'll try
security.
To get to it tomorrow. Yeah, because all of his top officials are quitting. So we'll see how much longer Pete Hegseth survives at the Pentagon. Don't be surprised if he's not around by the end of the week. So – when you say Pete Hegseth will always be there, I don't know. We'll see.
We'll see.
818-985-KPFK. Alec in Los Angeles. Hey, Alec, welcome to the broadcast, sir.
Oh, thank you, Brad. Sure. Thank you, Desi. I'm going to just go. April 1st, 2025, and so it begins. Treason, criminal acts. These criminals are criminally liable. They're financially liable. That's how we get them. Fitting to begin on April Fool's Day, we're well into the shock and awe destruction that began earlier. There's zero doubt that the American Republic and government is under a dangerous, coordinated, and premeditated attack. The targets are reality, truth, the rule of law, the U.S. Constitution, the American Republic, and the American people. The actors are many in both national and international in scope. There are indications of what Russia terms political technology extent. But we have a path through this. We've got 32% Republicans, 80% of them like it. That gives 25% of the population. And that's mixed martial arts, worldwide wrestling foundation culture. And they have blood on their minds. The solution is 75% of the rest of the people, which includes independents, liberals, working people, intellectuals, and true conservatives. And we have to learn to make friends and coalitions with fellow humans who have ideas that differ from our own, including Liz Cheney and Joe Biden, et cetera.
Mm-hmm.
Lastly, this must be stopped before elections 2 years out, as it's unlikely that they will show respect for election law. Thank you.
Well done, Alec. Appreciate that. Thank you. And I'm finding it all kind of difficult to disagree with in any way, shape, or form. Do we have another, we got time for another call or two here, Des? I think we do. Let's go to Karen in Oakland. Hey, Karen, congratulations on your new mayor up there, Barbara Lee.
Yes, it's just by a few thousand votes right here, but anyway, first, I don't know why you played Eric Clapton as bumper music, because last time I checked, he was still a COVID denier.
And secondly, with all these tariff talks, I haven't heard anything from the WTO, World Trade Organization. Aren't they supposed to be like refereeing all these talks over the tariffs and which are you know, viable and which are not? I haven't seen anything other than if you bury in the, some section of Bloomberg.
Yeah.
And I'll take my answer off the air. Thank you.
All right. Appreciate the call. I would say that interesting point. I have also not seen any remarks from the WTO on all of this. I will say that the Trump administration dropped out of the WTO. So I think they consider themselves to not that it doesn't matter what the WTO says. Even if they didn't drop out, I'm sure they don't care what the WTO says, because they don't care about anything other than what, you know, Donald Trump says about any particular thing. So, but interesting point as well. 818-985-KPFK. I should stop giving out the number, shouldn't I? Because we're coming up to the top of the hour. So
yes.
Do I have one more? Do I have time for one more here?
Barely.
Barely. John in West Hollywood. Hey, John, welcome to the broadcast.
Am I there?
You are there.
Yeah, I have to make this quicker than I want, but I'm promoting veganism, which I never hear discussed hardly by anybody, including you, but I don't listen to you all the time. But it causes so many problems in the world, and we can do it as individuals. A lot of us can. Not everybody can. But
Wait, you're not saying veganism causes problems in the world?
No, it's a way to help solution.
Right.
To solve a lot
eating
of
meat
like
causes
pollution,
right.
And cruelty, and okay. Efficacy of antibiotics and pandemics are caused by animals and being eaten a lot of times. Climate change, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
And this is the UN said a lot of this stuff, too. And worker exploitation is a horrible industry. There's so many reasons to go vegan if you can. And I think a lot of your listeners could. And you probably could.
I probably
That's
could.
What I'm here to say.
All right. Thanks, John. Well said. I appreciate that. And I appreciate you doing exactly that, making up for my failures to talk about everything because I can't get to everything. So that's just what I asked for. And I'm greatly appreciative, John. And I appreciate everyone who called in, whether I was able to get to you or not. I'm also appreciative of my board operator today, Wendell the Handyman Handy. Thank you, brother. To our producer, Desi Doyen, and to all of you for spending a portion of your day or night with us. If you missed any portion of today's show, you can download it for free anytime at bradblog.com. Drop me email if you like. I'm bradcast@bradblog.com. And on the social medias, especially Blue Sky, you will find me at The Brad Blog. See you there. Until we see you here next time, I'm Brad Friedman. Good luck, world.
Listening to the Bradcast. We are 100% listener supported, thanks to listeners like you who drop by bradblog.com/donate.